This is WMBR Cambridge. It is now 11 o'clock.
Welcome to the 21st Annual Homelessness Marathon, America's Town Hall on Homelessness. The number to call in is 877-NOBODY-8. That's 877-662-6398. We welcome your perspective, whether it is the same as ours or not, but we do want you to know what ours is. Our view is that homelessness is a problem that can and must be solved quickly, while respecting homeless people's rights as citizens. And we want to ask, what keeps us from doing that?
Good morning and welcome to the 21st Annual Homelessness Marathon. It's a unique radio program that gives homeless people and their allies a chance to speak with the nation about their experiences. My name is Linda Pinkow. I'm the news director at WMBR, the community campus radio station at MIT in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hello, everyone across the country. We're so glad to be hosting the marathon this year. This hour is going to be focused on youth homelessness. As you probably are aware, this is the second of 14 hours that we'll be broadcasting. And this one is focused on the youth. There'll also be another one coming up later on. I think it's hour number six, where we're going to be doing student homelessness. But more about that later. So I'm joined in the studio by 5 people who work in the field of homeless services or have received homeless services. And I'd like to introduce each one of them, and then we'll start the conversation. We have 2 staff members from a group called Community Teamwork, Inc., which is located in Lowell, Massachusetts. Carl Howell is Division Director of Housing and Homeless Services. He's been with Community Teamwork since 2010. Developing and managing family shelters and domestic violence residential programs. And Carl, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
There he is. Amanda Millardo is his co-worker. She joined Community Teamwork last year as Director of Homeless Youth Services. She formerly worked with homeless youth at Bridge Over Troubled Waters, an agency in Boston that provides services for homeless, runaway, and at-risk youth. Hi, Amanda.
Hello.
Christina is a former participant in one of their programs, the College Engagement Program. She is currently a college student at UMass Lowell, or University of Massachusetts in Lowell. She's a nursing major. Christina, thank you so much for coming.
No problem.
And we're joined by Ominik Garner. She is co-facilitator of the Boston Youth Action Board, an organization that allows youth and young adults age 25 and under to advise the city of Boston on improving services provided to youth and young adults who are experiencing homelessness and housing instability. Ominik, hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And finally, Jacob Hart is Advocacy Director at Y2Y, the nation's first student-run overnight program for young adults experiencing homelessness. Y2Y is located in Harvard Square, Cambridge. It opened in 2015, and Jacob joined Y2Y this summer. He is the Advocacy Director there. He's also a rising junior at Boston University. Jacob, thank you so much for joining us as well.
Thank you.
I think we're going to start out by talking about Y2Y, maybe because it's the closest to our studio here at MIT. What is Y2Y? Just tell us briefly, how did it get started and what's its goal?
So Y2Y is the nation's first student-run homeless shelter. We serve youth experiencing homelessness ages 18 to 24 with a youth-to-youth model. So all the employees in the space are like around college age. And it was started back in 2013 by Harvard students, Sarah Rosenkrantz and Sam Greenberg. And they, working at Harvard Square Homeless Shelter, realized that youth felt much safer in a shelter run by people their age than they did in adult shelters with like older populations. So they realized there's a need, and then worked with the Phillips Brooks House Association at Harvard to create this awesome space that we have now.
Mm-hmm. What does it look like? How big is it? And how many people does it hold?
We serve between 22 and 26 people a night.
And is it open all year long?
So it's somewhat seasonal. We do the hottest months and the coldest months. So we were open from June 26th to August 7th this year. We'll reopen in October to May.
That's great. You've been there for a couple of months working there. What are some of the takeaways what do you see when you go there? What is most interesting and maybe eye-opening to you as a new employee there?
Yeah, well, I think it's definitely special. I think the youth model goes a really long way. There's a lot of dialogue between staff and guests to just really listen and have conversations that go both ways. And the willingness just to work from staff and guests on like case management, on advocacy opportunities, and just try and make a bit of a difference and just improve has been really great.
Great. Amonique Garner, you are with the Boston Youth Action Board. It was founded in November 2016. What is the Boston Youth Action Board and how did it come about?
So the Boston Youth Action Board is a group of youth and young adults that either currently are or have experienced homelessness or housing instability. So we work with the city and the state and other nonprofits, professionals to help the systems and services that are supposed to be working to meet our needs, basically. Mm-hmm. And so we applied for this HUD grant, and we won $4.9 million, basically, to prevent and end youth and young adult homelessness and housing instability.
Wow.
So with that, we had the rise to the challenge, and we brought together, people from all aspects of Boston, basically. Hospitals, Boston Public Schools, other nonprofits and providers for us, and basically started this coordinated plan to prevent and end youth and young adult homelessness. So we matched that money. We still are working on matching that money, so it'll be $10 million. We have this huge plan with a bunch of things that we will be doing. So a 24-hour drop-in center, peer navigators. There's a lot going on with us.
So that's a lot of money coming from the federal government, from Housing and Urban Development, or HUD. That's fantastic. But tell me more about how the Boston Youth Action Board interacts with the city. What kind of city agencies do you meet with?
So once we joined the Rise to the Challenge, basically, we split up into five different committees. Basically, we have an executive committee where we had four youth and young adults on that board, along with head of housing. So we would be meeting at the D&D. So we'd meet
at the where?
Department of Neighborhood Development.
Okay.
Along with Sheila Dillon, Marty Walsh, Marty Martinez. All types of people. Peter, so like I said, Peter from Boston Public Schools, people from Children's Hospital, Brigham and Women, so everyone.
So not just the city government, but also the big institutions,
yes,
like hospitals.
Yes, big institutions and hospitals. And recently actually just partnered with BU to start a youth-led action research hub. But right now we got a pilot from Liberty Mutual, so we hired six youth and young adults with lived experience, black and brown, hired them at $18 an hour and something.
Yeah. For those people listening in Alaska and Hawaii and wherever, the minimum wage here is going up to $15 an hour soon. But that's a different story. So,
yeah.
But Amonique, so what have been, you think, some of the successes of the Boston Youth Action Board? What have you been able to convince the city to do?
Actually being able to work together with these different partners and understand each other when we speak two different languages. So with the committees that we had the executive committee, community engagement, permanent connections committee, health and well-being, and stable housing. And in all those committees, we had providers that provide for youth and young adults, working with youth and young adults, where we're advising them, telling them what works and what actually doesn't work, because often we see data shows that things are working, things are improving, and we know that they're actually not. So we need the people that are actually dealing with these things being at the table and actually making the decisions.
That's a really interesting point, that sometimes data doesn't reflect actual lived experience. I think we'll all talk about that a little more. But thank you for mentioning that. I want to bring in my friends here from Community Teamwork, which is a nonprofit community action agency committed to helping low-income people become self-sufficient. It's located in the city of Lowell, which, if you're not familiar with the area, it's about an hour's drive from Boston, up near the New Hampshire border. The current population of Lowell is around 110,000, which makes it the fourth largest city in Massachusetts. Lowell has been called the cradle of the American Industrial Revolution. Some of the country's first textile mills and factories were started in Lowell. Of course, the factories are gone now. Today, the economy of Lowell contains some high tech, some cultural institutions, the University of Massachusetts Lowell campus, and diverse local businesses. The city has been able to redevelop some of the old mills and factories into contemporary offices, cultural spaces, leading to what some consider a renaissance. And also, according to the last U.S. Census, about half the population of Lowell is non-Hispanic white. And among the diverse immigrant groups living in Lowell, 12% of the population was from Cambodia and 11% of Puerto Rican descent. But that's just by way of a little introduction to the city of Lowell, if you're not familiar with it, and you may know it as, of course, the birthplace of Jack Kerouac. Let's talk about Community Teamwork. Carl or Amanda, I don't know which one of you would like to take this, but just introduced Community Teamwork. What's the mission of your organization?
So the mission of our agency is to really, not eradicate, but really to support the working poor and those who are experiencing poverty, and to minimize their experience of poverty through whatever means. You know, our name is Community Teamwork, and we really take that seriously, that we are a community. We're not just in Lowell. We serve actually 63 different cities and towns within the Commonwealth. So we have a large region of providing supportive services to those who are experiencing poverty or the effects of poverty.
And so Community Teamwork held a youth homelessness summit last year that seems very exciting to me. What was its purpose?
So... last year, we really embarked on trying to create momentum and awareness to the issue of youth homelessness. And when we say youth homelessness, that's, for us, it means 16 to 24-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And we saw that there was a growing issue and a growing number of youth that were experiencing homelessness or housing instability. And we really wanted to really engage not only the city and our partners, but also the other stakeholders like local businesses and everyone that's in the community, to really say this is something that we can solve, and we need everyone in the community to support. So we had an event last June 2018, and it really reflected the model that Boston had. They had held their summit, or what they call the launch. Their launch, I think, a month prior, and we really kind of replicated what they had done to bring it to Lowell. And we identified four different committees to really kind of work and engage people. So we had a housing committee, a data committee, a prevention and intervention committee, and then a health and wellness. And I think, as has already been spoken, we brought in all the different stakeholders. So we had, individuals from the hospitals there for the health and wellness and how they can engage, as well as landlords or housing providers that provide housing issues in other community agencies.
Mm-hmm. So the results?
It was a kickoff event, really. I mean, we call it the summit, which kind of entitles that there was a peak, but it was really our launch and our kickoff event to really generate momentum. And so we rolled out our plan. So we had a year plan to identify resource mapping, identify lack of services that are in the region, and then also bring people to coordinate those resources. So we're about to roll out our second annual summit, which is going to be in September, to bring all those people, in addition to other people that we have identified that weren't at the original one, to bring together to show the results of what we've done. When we had the summit, the initial summit last year, we had no programming at Community Teamwork. And since then, we have a full department. We're about to open a youth opportunity center in the heart of Lowell that's really going to focus on providing assessment, crisis intervention, as well as educational components and outreach for youth in our community.
Well, Carl, let me ask you something. You've been working in the field of homeless services for many years now. Mm-hmm. How is it that only recently there's been a focus on youth? Why was that not considered an issue as much as it is now, do you think?
I mean, that's very complicated, and there's probably tons of reasons why.
Uh-huh.
I would say that the youth tend to be maybe not invisible, but a very marginalized community.
Right.
I think when we think about youth, we feel that, you know, someone is supporting them. And the reality is that when young adults between 16 and 24, maybe they don't have family supports. Maybe they were a part of, systems like group homes and that. And so they age out, they no longer have that support. And they're basically, when they turn 18, they're asked to figure it out. And they don't have a family member or a place to go.
Mm-hmm.
We also work with college students. And as we know, across the country, college is very, very expensive. It's almost, impossible for people to go to school, or they walk out with hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt. And a lot of the youth that we work with in colleges, UMass Lowell had last year 43 students within their campus that were identified as being homeless or housing unstable.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the reasons is they can't afford room and board.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they can afford room and board, they don't have any housing when the school is closed.
Right.
So whether that's the winter breaks, whether that is the summer time, they have no place to go.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have enough income to afford the expensive rents and housing market here. So we really need to support them around that. So one of the reasons is just it's a population, I think, that most people believe they are supported in some way. But we're really finding out that there's many youth that are not supported. They also don't see themselves as homeless.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't identify as that, and they don't identify as what resources there are in the community to help them.
I think those are great points. But let's hear from the youth now. Let's not hear from the youth. It's part of what we want to do here. So let's bring in Christina. She's a program participant. You are now a student at University of Massachusetts at Lowell. You're a nursing major. Congratulations on that.
Thank
Wonderful.
You.
But you were homeless for a little while until you found Community Teamwork. Tell us a little bit about how that came about. I know you don't want to get into personal details, but just generally, and then how you found Community Teamwork and what happened.
Yeah, sure. So basically after my freshman year, it was just, I was living with a foster home before that. So I did have stable housing, but then once college happened, it was like, oh, like you're on your own now. Like you're independent, like you're going through school. And it was basically just me, myself, and I on my own. So I went through the fall semester, it was fine. And then winter break, I was able to afford like half of it. I asked another organization for money for them so I could stay in student housing there. And then it came to after spring break, it was summer housing. And it was like, oh my God, like I looked at the bill and I was like, wow, that's like $4,000, like just for like half of the summer or part of it. And I was like, there's no way like I'm going to be able to afford that. So I found out about CTI through a person who is in UMass Lowell. She advocates for homelessness and food instability, and her name's Annie Seraldi. And she basically told me about them, and she said, you should definitely reach out to them and see what they can do for you, because they'd be a very helpful resource. So I did. She got me connected with them, and basically I met Amanda, who's here with us, and I met Carl and Nick and Brittany that are all part of their team. And they were there for me. They basically just helped me find student housing, and I was able to have a bed at night during the summer months and enjoy my time there and also be able to focus on school because I'm taking a class right now as well. And without them, it would be very hard for me to do that. And yeah.
So are you going to be part of the Boston Youth Action Board? No, not Boston, the Lowell Youth Action Board, I'm sorry.
So I plan on it. I think I'm part of it now. I'm very involved in it now. We have a meeting once a month on the first Wednesday of every month, and I'm actually, this week, we're going to plan on what we want to talk about this week, because last week we talked about a whole policy that we read over and everything that we're trying to implement for students so we can understand, or specifically for youth, to see what we can do for them for the future. Because right now, like, we just became aware of it in the past year, and now the year's coming, we want to make sure that we have a handle of that and everybody understands, like, are we doing what we're supposed to be doing for the youth? What's gonna actually help them? That's why we were reviewing everything over this policy that we made. Mm-hmm. But CTI is great.
Community teamwork, great. Yes. And we are talking with two staff members from Community Teamwork, Carl Howell and Amanda Milardo, as well as Christina, one of their program participants, and others. We'll get back to that in a minute. But I have a question for you, Christina. So it was just about 2 years ago that you started college and you're completely on your own, and now you have this network of people and you're doing stuff to help yourself and to help others who have been, who are going through what you have been through. What's that, in just a few short years, has everything changed for you? I mean, what is that like to go through that change? What's sort of the biggest impact of that for you?
So it most definitely did have a change for me, because I would say my freshman year, I really didn't want to identify as like, oh, like, I'm homeless, because it's embarrassing, you could say, to a young adult, and like to the friends, it's kind of hard to say that as well. So I use that as a strength, and I use that to make awareness for others, because I know other people on campus who are embarrassed to share that, oh, like, I don't have anywhere to go tonight, like, or like, I slept in my friend's house, or I slept in my car, like, they're embarrassed to say it. So for them to know that, like, a person like me wants to share their story and wants to be a voice, it gives them confidence. And that's definitely changed my perspective over the past 2 years of, like, okay, like, we can make a change if everybody works together. And even if you hear voices like mine, people who actually went through it, there can definitely be a change in the future.
And I want to ask you, Jacob, you're with the Y2Y, the Harvard Square Youth Shelter, which focuses on young people who are homeless. Are some of the people that you serve also students?
We have, I think, maybe one or two students right now. A lot of what we do is trying to get some of our guests to get into schools. A lot of them have been to school for a little bit and now have debt and are in the shelter and trying to figure out either how to pay off that debt and how to get back to school. And the resources available for them.
So Cambridge is a very wealthy community.
Very.
And Harvard Square is a very upscaled, gentrified. People, wealthy tourists come from all over the world to visit there. What brings homeless youth to Harvard Square?
I think it's a very safe place for the most part. The community is welcoming. I think businesses in Harvard Square have been really really helpful with us, whether it's donations or just support. The First Parish Church has been great with giving us space for Y2Y. But I think on the whole, Cambridge is just a very progressive area that I think at its heart does want to make a difference. Like Harvard students volunteer, and it's just like, it's like an intellectual place. You know, it's just mm-hmm. it just seems like a good, safer spot than some of the rougher areas across the river.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of across the river, Amanique Garner across the table, who's with the Boston Youth Action Board. You live in Boston and you deal with the city of Boston, but I mean, you know Cambridge as well. Do you perceive that difference for young people? Is Cambridge maybe being safer than Boston?
I would say easier to get services So people often come from Boston and they go to Cambridge to get those service, which messes up our data altogether when we're trying to figure out who's who and where, how our charts are moving. So there are some people, and especially some of our members from the Boston Youth Action Board, especially the LGBT community, who feel safer at Y2Y. But they also have a shelter on Bagley. Well, not a shelter, a drop-in center on Bagley that just opened up in Boston. But it's either going in between. It's like, all right, so Bridge Over Troubled Waters, if you get kicked out or there's some problem at Bridge Over Troubled Waters, then where do you go next that's going to accept another youth and young adult? So it's Y2Y next.
We need to talk a little bit about what Bridge Over Troubled Waters is. Can you just explain that, or may you go first?
Well, Bridge Over Troubled Waters is the youth and young adult shelter in Boston. It's also a safe place. So if you're underage and dealing with homelessness or housing instability, you could call up and they'll send a van to pick you up and find you shelter for that night. They have case management there, a therapist and psychiatrist on call that's like always there. So that's very, very helpful, because when you're dealing with this and multiple other traumas as well, you know, sometimes you just need to walk in and be able to talk to someone right away and get those services and not have to worry about having health insurance or not. So
that's great.
Yeah, they're huge. They're a huge help to our community. And second floor, they do different types of therapy. They have a kitchen. So there's a lot, and they have a van, too, that serves us,
right,
too. So,
yeah. You can see their van around town at least a couple days a week, right? And they have medical services. And they go to Cambridge as well as Boston, right?
Yeah.
And, Amanda, you used to work there as well.
I did. I used to work there.
Well, let me ask you, Amanda. You are the director of Homeless Youth Services. I imagine you're somewhat aware of what goes on in other states throughout the country. Is Massachusetts on the cutting edge, or are a lot of other states doing this kind of work?
I would say that we're doing pretty well in Massachusetts. I think that we are really working hard to make sure that it's not just like singular towns or cities, but more so that it's spread across the entire state. So there's a lot of communication and efforts being made to kind of pull in different communities and different partners. I know, for example, for Lowell, even though, you know, Lowell's a big city, we have connections with Lawrence and other surrounding towns. I know that there's a lot of work to be done, or there's a lot of work that has been done, for Lowell and for Boston and connecting to Cambridge and like the other surrounding towns to that too. So Massachusetts, I would say, is really working as a whole to recognize this problem, to raise awareness to this problem, and to bring the proper people to the table that need to address it.
Great. And Carl, did you have a comment on that?
I don't know what's going on in every other state, but I do believe that Massachusetts is one of the most progressive states. The governor supports the work that we do around homelessness. So, for example, family homelessness is a right. So there's the government actually puts money into providing shelter, and they've kind of doubled down on the youth. And one of the funding sources that we have is from the state, in addition to some other funding that we have that basically provides supportive services across the whole state and develop these regions that for us, CTI is one of the hubs for the North Middlesex region, which is about 30 towns and communities that we have to help kind of navigate resources and mapping for any homeless youth in that region.
I just want to piggyback. I'm part of the National Youth Collaborative. So basically we're a bunch of youth and young adults, paid consultants dealing with housing instability, advocating for people dealing with housing instability and sexual exploitation. So basically we're meeting with different, there's youth all across, and like everyone's saying, we're up there, we're running up. Not every state has a youth shelter, so and not every state really acknowledges youth and young adult homelessness now because of the YHDP grant. Federal money's coming in, so every state's trying to like hop on the bandwagon, and they're looking at what Boston's doing and other people are doing, that like Connecticut, and seeing what they're doing and trying to really create a youth action board. But it's really about, is that action board actually, is it authentic? Is it really youth ran? And I could say Boston, we truly are youth ran, and we're authentic, and we have a huge group of people from all different backgrounds and dealing with different levels of homelessness and housing instability. And our city's here backing us up. Mayor actually funded us before we won this grant and, you know, now gave us the opportunity. Our directors used to be our facilitators. Now they're our directors, and they hired four youth and young adults and now pay us to now take on their spot.
Oh, that's
and
great.
We also won a grant. The Office of Workforce Development won a grant for $100,000 just to help youth and young adults with employment.
Mm-hmm. So. And I just wanted to follow up on something that Carl said, just for people who don't know, our governor is a Republican, Charlie Baker. Just FYI for those people in red states. It can be done. It can be done. But we're a little past halfway through this hour, and I want to mention a couple of things to you. You're listening to the 21st Annual Homelessness Marathon, a national dialogue on homelessness and poverty in America. Part of that dialogue is taking phone calls, and we'd like to invite you to call in and talk with us. The phone number is 877-NOBODY-8. That's nobody, numeral 8. Or, if you prefer, 877-662-6398. A phone answer is standing by. And I'm joined by two staff members from Community Teamwork, a social service agency in Lowell, Massachusetts, Carl Howell and Amanda Millardo, as well as Christina, a program participant in their youth homelessness program, Amonique Garner, co-facilitator of the Boston Youth Action Board, and Jacob Hart, advocacy director at Y2Y, the nation's first student-run overnight program for young adults experiencing homelessness. So I want to hear more about how youth feel about interacting with government and corporate officials and the people in charge. I mean, a lot of times I think adults, you know, don't take this issue seriously, or they don't take youth seriously. What are, I mean, maybe let's start with Jacob. I think you've also, you worked with Healthcare for the Homeless in the past. What's the sense that you have about some of the unique needs of homeless youth versus homeless adults?
Yeah, I think the needs definitely are different. I think we see people aging out of foster care. We see people not being accepted at home for a variety of reasons, whether it be how they identify or other reasons. And we just see a more vulnerable population. It's objectively more dangerous for a youth to be out on the street than someone who's been around for a longer period of time.
Why is that?
Well, I think especially coming out of like any support system, and that just being gone. And we've definitely had guests this summer who come 2 days ago they were at home, and now they're in Cambridge, far away, which is just a more vulnerable position.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what do you think, Dominique?
Yeah, it's different. I just like to say, gentrification's real, and that's affecting our population majorly.
Right.
And altogether, it's different for youth because when you have to apply for housing, if you're not taught things, how do you do things? How do you, if your credit's usually messed up, most youth already don't have good credit because either it was them or a family situation. So how do you fix that, and how do you get housing? Then when you're underage, how do you get housing when you usually need someone to sign over for you? So, and I just like, just seeing literally how everything is between getting jobs when you're dealing with this already, and then not being able to get a job that's a livable wage. Really, to be in Boston, you're supposed to be making $35 to actually like survive and be able to live in Boston. So being an individual youth and young adults on your own, how can you make that? So we know the median net worth between white Americans in Boston, it's what, $275,000 is the median net worth of a white individual, white family, and it's $8 for a black family, right? And we see how gentrification is happening in Dorchester, Mattapan, and Roxbury. Those are predominantly black neighborhoods. 55% of our youth are black. You know, 35% are Latinx, 29 are LGBTQ. So we're the most at risk right now. And then if you're black and LGBTQ, or Latinx and LGBTQ, imagine what comes with that. So we're just really struggling when you're trying to get jobs, when you're dealing with those things, racism and classism. And so it's just like, it's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Christina, how are you feeling about interacting with sort of the youth, the adults who are in charge of youth in Lowell, the establishment, if you will? What's that like for you?
So I think in the beginning, one of the biggest challenges was to be taken seriously, because when you're trying to elaborate on what the problems are in Lowell or in neighboring cities, it's like when you're a youth trying to tell an adult, like, I need help, and or this is what's happening, they kind of don't believe you at first. But then when you have people who back you up, like CTI, it's like, oh, okay, this is actually an organization who's trying to do something about homelessness. They take you more seriously and they'll help you do something about it. But now it's just a growing problem that I'm happy that we're able to do something about it.
And I wanted to mention again the phone number, which is 877-NOBODY-8. And we don't have any callers yet, so that's okay. We'll keep talking. Actually, I wanted to ask you, Amanda, yes. Amanda Millardo, who is the Director of Homeless Youth Services at Community Teamwork. You see people come in. You see young people come in crisis. Mm-hmm. And what is the transformation that you see through the services that you provide?
Well, that's an excellent question. In general, when we have young people that walk through our door, and right now the programming is relatively small. I mean, there's several staff, but we have about 5 programs that are geared towards these young people that are in crisis or instability or what have you. You know, the thing about it, anytime that someone walks through our doors, the first thing that we really focus on is that relationship component. You know, it's hard to you know, have that conversation with someone, to be able to kind of put yourself out there and be heard, very similar to what Christina was saying. And so we find that first things first is being able to understand what the problem is, understand what the young person is coming to us for, and being open and compassionate and really making sure that we're client-centered and client-focused. So when that happens, a lot of our work kind of just like falls into place, right? So once we kind of can just meet young people where they're at, have those conversations, and figuring out what the next steps are, that's youth-led, we find that it's successful. I would say that's, you know, we've had a variety of different situations that kind of presented at our doorstep, and we really just try to take things one step at a time. And, you know, from that, we've been able to really build, you know, a community, which is something that I know the Boston Youth Action Board has, and Y2I and Lowell. That's important, because right now it's a different landscape in Lowell than it would be in Boston, just because they have more of that you know, the services that are geared toward it. And so we're still at the cutting edge of that for Lowell, and really figuring out what that community is, where those young people are, how we can access them, and what do we need to do across the board to make sure that they're taken care of.
And what would you say to someone in an organization like yours in a state where there isn't all this funding and support? How would you, what would you encourage them to do?
Well, I think that it comes down to really listening, is that like these young people exist everywhere, and recognizing that you it's really difficult and challenging to be able to kind of lump these young people experiencing these things and these crises in with like an older population or a family population or what have you. So it's just something that if you take a step back and you really think about what you're listening to, or the person that's in front of you addressing these problems, I think that's gonna really shine some light on some of the issues that are presented, you know, in your own backyard.
Mm-hmm. How do you go about involving youth in planning for the housing services they need? I mean, we've talked about this a little bit, but are there sort of tricks as a professional who does this? I mean, how do you reach out to them and encourage them to be self-directed and allow them to be to have some agency on their own?
Well, myself and the team, we really focus on just recognizing that this is their life and this is their choice. And we will support them, whatever it is that they might need, and get them to that point and have them take initiative to do those things independently with our supports, right? So realistically, what it comes down to is just, you know, housing is expensive, right? Especially in Lowell, not as bad as Boston right now, but it's close. And so we try to figure out what are a realistic goal that these young people might have. You know, is it having your own apartment, you know, or, you know, living in, I don't know, a nice part of town or bad part of town, wherever it is. But it's more of like, all right, well, so maybe, you know, you want this, and these are things that we can definitely work towards, but there are steps that we're going to have to take before we can get there. And making sure that not only housing is available and present and accessible, but then also all the other things that you need to maintain housing, right? So employment and then education and all of those other components that kind of tie into maintenance of that. So I think that we really focus on just going back to that youth-centered and direction, is that like we'll help support and get you to where you want to be, but you have to want it.
Mm-hmm. I want to quote what you say to older adults about how they need to work with homeless youth.
Well, with us, it was like the hardest part was them really understanding that we know what's best, and we're in our position because of systems, because of systems, and we're resilient, and we don't want to stay here, and we all have goals, and, you know, we have a vision, and we know we could get there, but we need some support, but we know what we want, basically. Mm-hmm. So basically, with doing all this, you have to have a strong group of youth and young adults that bond together. So if you don't, it's finding that population. And I guess it was really easy for the Boston Youth Action Board because of our directors who were our facilitators were this population. They were youth and young adults living with housing instability and homelessness. Right. So it was easy for them to find us. Uh-huh. And then the facilitators, we have the same experience. So we just bond together. We could walk down to Boston and it's easy for us to find our people and connect and say, oh, this is what we're doing. We're having this meeting. We have a meeting every week. Well, as the facility is doing, we have our group meeting twice a month. Mm-hmm. So just opening that up and then telling them, like, you know, we have the power to make change in numbers. So, yeah, just getting them to understand that we know in the education piece, like you said, it's housing first. We believe in housing first. We have our set rules, our truth and values that we stand by. And anyone working with us goes and sees that, and they have to sign a contract like, you know, you understand and you believe these things too. Mm-hmm. You know, housing first, but housing isn't just it. So we need housing, and we need the education, the employment, we need the permanent connection. That was one of the hardest things, actually. Mm-hmm. With our whole Rise to the Challenge and our Boston Plan to Prevent and Youth and Young Adult Homelessness, they didn't understand what is that permanent connection. What is, like, that committee was really struggling.
And explain it.
That permanent connection is very important. If you don't have a parent, who do you call to fill out a check? Who signs for the house for you, you know, when you need that second person doing that, who tells you the simple things are okay, you need to go to the grocery store, and there's not a grocery store close to your neighborhood, and you just got housing and they moved you out here in a random location. Mm-hmm. So basically it's just that one person that will call and check up on you. Everyone needs that. Mm-hmm. So
Amonique, you're on the Boston Youth Action Board. What has it meant to you personally?
Everything. I basically, I have a couple of disabilities, physical and mental. So I have, I'm dyslexic, but that's never stopped me with anything. I graduated school and I was good, and, you know, I have a blood disorder and I have a connective tissue disorder called Ehlers-Danlos. It's a rare condition. So I used to do hair and then figured out I couldn't do hair. That's why I have these finger splints. But seeing that, I was like, what am I going to do? Everything was going crazy. When your physical goes, your mental goes. And I was like, I'm applying for Social Security. I'm not going to be able to work. I wasn't very social. I also was homeschooled because I was sick. So during a period of my time, freshman year, I was homeschooled. So it made me kind of like socially awkward. So I was like, what am I going to do with life? You know, then dealing with homelessness and housing instability came from Middleboro to moving to Quincy to moving to Boston. I moved my whole life. I've been dealing with homelessness and housing instability. I move every 2 to 3 years. So, and not really noticing or realizing this until I was older and it was like truly, truly affecting me. And then I found the Boston Youth Action Board and was like, okay, I just was going to go get that stipend and make change and meet and bond with people that were dealing with the same thing. It was like a therapy session, mm-hmm. you know. After that, we do panels, we do education sessions, we do a bunch of things. So doing those different events, our co-facilitators make sure the other people, if it's not because if we have a certain amount of funds that they could pay stipends, someone wants to do something, you're not tokenizing us. We're not here to tell stories. We're here to educate. So, and do you have funding for that? Do you have $50 or $100 to pay each person? So basically building that, I started building my advocacy skills. Then being on all those committees, I was on the Health and Wellbeing Committee, the Executive Committee, and the Data Committee. The Data Committee moved to the Data Modeling Committee, and I just seen how important and how systems work. And then I did this training, You Meet. It's all about permanent, it's all about connections. Doing all these things with the Boston Youth Action Board, all these events. Every time I go, I meet people and they come up to me, hey, here's my email. And they really call and they connect with me. And they give me different opportunities. There's this free event. There's this free event. Oh, come with me here. I end up doing a training for Harvard, at Harvard TH Chan School. And I was just like, whoa. And it taught me just how this whole system works, the ecological model and everything. And I said, wow, this is set up. Like this system is set up to oppress me and oppress my people and other people. And I think about those most marginalized, you know. And then I was just like, and then dealing with the data, I seemed like the data wasn't right. They said 300 in Boston, 300 those that are hiding from domestic violence, running from domestic violence, don't touch systems, the immigrant population, the black populations, which is most likely always doubled up and couch surfing. So it's like a whole population that you are not touching or counting. So, and I seen like, just like I said, between Mattapan, Roxbury, and Dorchester, from Bridge Over Troubled Waters, it was like 78% of the youth came from those areas. Mm-hmm. Then I seen data change, and now all of a sudden they went from talking about that to, okay, now they're only talking about Roxbury and Mattapan, and now that makes it to like 66%. So data is funny. So I said, we mm-hmm. need to go out there and we need to collect it. Plus, I want to get those skills and that education. So we should be able to get paid and do that and take their positions, basically. So
yeah, there needs to be jobs for youth who can to do these kinds of work, things. Mm-hmm. Empowering jobs like that. How often do you get an empowering job like that, right?
Yeah.
Most youth get sort of dead-end sort of jobs. But
and when you do research, yeah. Usually there's no action to it. They get this research, mm-hmm. they find it, and they present it to people and no action. And this is really about, like, restorative justice, reclaiming our land and our space, and yeah.
All right, so in our last few minutes, I do want to talk more about action, and I think maybe I start with you, Jacob. What is your sense of what this country needs to do for homeless youth at this point? What do they need?
I think they need housing. I think they need safety and sanctuary. Yeah, I was reading an article. I was talking about housing as medicine, which mm-hmm. I thought was really interesting. Someone was fighting chronic illness as a homeless person and was able to cure it once they got housed. So I think that's mm-hmm. like really important place to start. And then listening and meeting people where they are.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And Christina, both of you are college students. You and Jacob are both college students working towards the medical careers. What do you think the adults of America need to be thinking about? What could they do better in terms of serving young people who are low income?
So I've said this before, but they need to be aware of what is going on, because mm-hmm. the majority of the United States doesn't really know what's going on because it's so new. But the class I'm taking right now, I actually have to write a paper on this about preventative measures, but I was doing it in older people. And one of the problems was that the homelessness started when they were youth. Mm-hmm. And if you prevent it when they're younger, then they're less likely to be homeless when they're older. And there's so many older adults on the street who are 65 or older who are homeless when you can start at the beginning and prevent it from the start. So just raising awareness and starting from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And Amanda, talk to your fellow adults. as someone who has been working in the field of youth homelessness for years now, what is the most important thing that adults who are not in this field that you know seem to get wrong about it?
Well, I would say that, you know, it comes down to the relationships. It comes down to opportunities. And I think that it's not as simple as just, oh, all right, you got to get up and you got to get a job and you got to make sure you make that money. There's a lot more to it. And I think that there needs to be that recognition of, you know, there's so many things that tie into stabilization and housing and all of those different components. I think that that is something I hear all the time. And I don't think that it's fair. Just, you know, meeting some of the young folks that I work with around the community and the young adults that are participating in our Lowell Youth Action Board. There's so many things that are at stake, you know, education, employment, all those things. But then there's also mental health and, you know, housing obviously is first and foremost a priority. But all of those other things need to be acknowledged and addressed, too.
Mm-hmm. Can I just speak about
that? Carl, yes, please.
The biggest things that I've learned in this process that I feel that people in my position or just other, you know, adults is understanding that there's a homeless issue across the country. However, youth homeless services is completely different and it needs to be approached completely differently than how, I guess, how the individual homelessness problem is being addressed. There's many different barriers that are completely different for young adults than there are for the older populations that, you know, as Christina had kind of pointed out.
And what are the most important ones of those?
Yeah. I mean, there's just so many things. Yeah, it's, you know, the youth are marginalized. They're not taken mm-hmm. seriously. Mm-hmm. They have barriers such as, you know, as you pointed out, as Nick pointed out, was credit issues, educational issues, just, you know, say housing. When an owner of a housing is going to rent to a young person, they see them completely different than they see a person who's 40 years old. Mm-hmm. They view them as not being taken seriously, that they're going to ruin their property, that they're going to throw parties and that type of stuff.
Right.
And so they're already discriminated against right off the bat because mm-hmm. they are 18, 19, 20, 21 years old just because of their age. There's a lot of, you know, ageism or discrimination because of that.
Well, I would agree with that, but I would say also that all homeless people are marginalized and not taken seriously by society, yeah. No matter what age they are.
I agree, yep. And I would just say one more thing. Everything you said and our brain are still developing, like, until you're 25, I believe. So that's major. And like I said, I'm not saying older adults aren't resilient, but after time, trauma goes over time. And when you're young, we're truly resilient. So it's like, catch us while we're young, and fix this problem. Because when you imagine having a 15-year-old, 17-year-old, 18-year-old going into a shelter with a bunch of adults, 60-year-olds, 50-year-olds, 80-year-olds, you know, in that position, they're like, wow, and I'm here, that's mm-hmm. going to be me in 8 years. And then there's people using in those shelters, so it puts you in a different mindset. They say the company you keep is very important, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. So. I wish we could go on with this, but we have run out of time, and this has been a terrific conversation. I want to thank all of you, Carl Howell and Amanda Millardo from Community Teamwork Inc. in Lowell, and Christina, former program participant, Amanique Garner with the Boston Youth Action Board, and Jacob Hart with Y2Y Shelter in Cambridge. My name is Linda Pinkow. I'm the news director here at WMBR. You're listening to the 21st Annual Homelessness Marathon, a national dialogue on homelessness and poverty in America. I just want to tell you this was hour two. We've got a total of 14 hours. The next hour will be on the subject of health care for the homeless. Coming up in hour eight, we'll have a whole hour on student homelessness. I hope you'll come back and join us for that if you're interested in the question of youth homelessness, as it'll be similar but an entirely different conversation with different guests. And coming up in hour 12, we're going to be focusing on LGBTQ issues, and we'll also be talking about some youth issues there. There's no shortage of stuff coming up here, and we're going to take a break at the top of the hour, and we'll be back shortly with Nobody live from downtown Boston. So do stay tuned. Thank you.
The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are not necessarily those of the hosting or affiliated radio stations, their personnel, or underwriters. To contact the Homelessness Marathon, write to questions@homelessnessmarathon.org.
You're listening to the annual Homelessness Marathon, which will continue from now until midnight. The program normally heard at this time, Lost and Found, will return next week. The news and opinions expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT. This is WMBR Cambridge. It's now 12 o'clock.